several miles off the main highway, tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property, stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me and dine me.
And it is the first Grape Encounters Radio for the new year 2011, and we are in the super secret broadcast location. No, we're not running a repeat, and we're not doing a best of, because for the first weekend of the new year, we would rather sit around and talk wine. I know a lot of people are watching the football games and parades, but not us wine lovers, no siree. It's all about wine this weekend, and I thought that the best way to start the new year would be with one of our very favorite guests and friends of Grape Encounters Radio, Wes Hagen of Clopepe Vineyards. He is our go-to guy, a wealth of knowledge. And, you know, there's so many things that are on my mind that I just thought I would see if I could drag Wes to the telephone and get him to talk with us for a little while. Hey, Wes, did you exercise your usual restraint last night?
Well, I can't probably say that, but I will say that I'm in a fine mood and looking forward to a wonderful new year. And fortunately for us, when we have a little bit of a hangover, there's always just a little bit of the dog of the hair that bit you, which is interesting. It's an old Roman tradition of burning the hair of a rabid dog that bit you and inhaling the vapors to cure you of rabies. So there you go, your first useless piece of trivia knowledge for 2011.
Okay, well, there's a valuable piece of information. So if some of you are nursing a hangover today, perhaps you can just grab Fido and a pair of scissors and take care of matters that way. Anyway, so Wes, it sounds like maybe you were not drinking just wine last night. So what does a Wes Hagen drink on New Year's Eve?
Well, you know, we definitely went for some tequila. There's some new tequilas that were given to me as a gift. One is called Cielo. The other one's called Sol de Mexico. Both of them are very, very good. So we had a little Añejo, a little Reposado, a little Blanco, did a little blending. We had my buddy Jeremy, who's a bartender extraordinaire. So he's a mixologist, worked at for Bradley Ogden and a couple other great bars. So he was mixing up crazy stuff all night long. And a lot of sparkling wine, a good amount of beer. So we kind of mixed it up as much as we can and had a great time with it.
So let me ask you a question. Well, first of all, I should say this for those who are listening who, for some strange reason, have never come upon Wes Hagen. Wes is a regular contributor to Grape Encounters Radio. He's the winemaker at Clopepe, a family operation in the Santa Rita Hills area of the Central Coast, and one of the really great Pinot Noir makers on planet Earth, but also a wine judge, a wine author, the author of multiple AVAs, and all around good guy, a Renaissance man, right?
On a good day.
Even roast your own coffee beans, and I think you make your own cheeses, do you not?
No, I evaporate salt. Cheese has not happened quite yet, although we do have a big flock of sheep. Unfortunately, to make cheese from a sheep, you have to take their babies away, and we're just not really down with that.
Okay, but maybe someday down the road. But anyway, so when we have someone that we want to turn to when we need information that we can't provide ourselves, we turn to Wes because it's largely known that Wes knows everything. And so here you are. But hey, let's go back to tequila for a second, even though we are a wine show. Tequila's interesting, isn't it? Because there's so much tequila being made, and it seems like the tequila industry is getting to be a lot like the wine industry. You know, they treat it with the same reverence, do they not? And there are even similarities between tequila and wine, because a lot of tequilas are even aged in oak barrels, right?
Sure, for sure. You know, tequila is obviously Real tequila is usually made in the Jalisco region of Mexico. Like all spirits when they come out of the still, if they're properly distilled, are water clear. And anytime you see a spirit that has a brown color to it, if it's an expensive spirit and one that's made with any type of craft, it went into an oak barrel, and that color was extracted from the oak. You may not know whiskey, when it goes into the barrel, is clear, and when it comes out, it's a brown as a result of the tannins and the influence of the oak. And I'm a big fan of Reposado and Añejo tequilas, both of which spend some time in the oak and mellow it out. I kind of see the world in two ways. There's tequilas that I think that I'm happy to mix, and tequilas that I like to sip. And I'd say 90% of the tequila that I drink is very fine tequila that I sip, and another 10% I keep a bottle in the back of usually silver tequila, you know, 10 to 12 bucks, maybe up to 20 bucks that all blend and make, you know, I like a margarita on the rocks sometimes.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because sometimes you'll go to somebody's house and they'll say, you know, we're going to break out the good tequila, and then out comes the Patron, right? And nothing really wrong with Patron, but a lot of people, I think most people probably are unaware of the fact that Patron in the grand scheme of things is just sort of, you know, in a middle range at best tequila, that there are tequilas
in the wine world, it would be a silver oak.
It would be a silver oak. Okay, well, that's...
Yeah, because most people will not, like, turn their head to the silver oak, but you talk to real Cabernet and Bordeaux guys, and they're not that excited usually about silver oak. It's a delicious wine, but it's sort of like it got a little too popular for its own britches,
yeah.
And now I don't think it gets the proper respect that it used to.
I think it's also very interesting that some of the people that make tequila make a pretty broad range of tequila, and
yeah.
You'll have some you know, very cheap tequilas, and a lot of those gold tequilas are just colored, I think, with food coloring.
You bet. You know that, and those are good for a party. But if you want to bust something out that's really special, my new favorite tequila is called Fortaneza, and that's Fortaneza, I believe. And it's actually the project of Guillermo Sousa, who's not, unfortunately, the Sousa family is now no longer involved in the Sousa tequila. But Guillermo took the money that he received probably from the sale and from his family and started his own small production tequila called Fortaneza down in Jalisco, Mexico. And they run from about 45 to 100 bucks, depending if you want the silver, the Añejo, or the Reposado. And I think the Reposado Fortaneza is for the money for under $100. It's probably, it's so damn good. It's like drinking, it's the equivalent of drinking, you know, a 12-year scotch in the scotch, you know, 12 or 18-year-old scotch. It's got wonderful, wonderful complexity. And if you have a chance to try that Fortaneza tequila, I got turned on to it by an intern of mine. And now I try to keep a bottle in the house hidden away from you know, from the charlatans. It's only for the true believers. It's really great sipping tequila.
Are there winemakers that are making tequila now?
No, actually, believe it or not, it's illegal. In fact, it's a felony to actually make spirits in the same facility as a winery. And the trick is you get, and I'm not suggesting this because I could be jailed for that, but you can get a $10 permit to take wine materials and re-ferment them into ethanol for your car or your tractor or your ATV or your motorcycle. And it would be funny that, you know, if you made that ethanol, it would be, you know, drinkable. But
okay.
Of course, that would be illegal to drink it. So you would never want to drink it. You would want to use it in your vehicle for that. Because to get an actual permit to produce ethanol for drinking is a much more involved process.
Okay, well, I really hadn't intended on talking about spirits here on Grape Encounters Radio, but oh my gosh, we are in very good spirits here with our very good friend Wes Hagen of Clopepe Vineyards, and we are going to be talking a lot more about wines in the upcoming segments. So much to talk about on this first show of 2011, Grape Encounters Radio.
We're just getting started. We're going to break open the really good stuff any minute now on Grape Encounters Radio. Here on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
At Grape Encounters Radio, we're very choosy about who we put on this show, and even more choosy about who we put on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. We really, really want to present nothing but quality to the listeners of Grape Encounters Radio and the visitors to GrapeEncountersRadio.com. But I want to really encourage you to go over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com because we've got some products there that I think you will really enjoy. First, just out of pure fun, we've presented to you the wine sports bra from Papa Burt's, and you've really got to check that out because it's a very, very cool invention. And also on Grape Encounters Radio, you'll find a link to the original Wine of the Month Club, the only wine club that we wholeheartedly endorse. So wander over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com, and we also have lots of links to all of our friends, people that we really think that you need to know. It's GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
A tropical island vacation doesn't have to mean long lines at security, crowded flights, and a huge travel budget. You'll find breathtaking ocean views, tropical breezes, exceptional dining and shopping, plus hundreds of ways to have fun on land and sea, just 26 miles off the Southern California coast, on enchanting Catalina Island. And there's absolutely no better way to enjoy everything that Catalina has to offer than in your own private Catalina Island vacation rental. Catalina Island Vacation Rentals offers you the choice of nearly 200 island homes, cottages, and condos, including an amazing selection of beautifully appointed Hamilton Cove villas, which offer sweeping ocean views and even come with a golf cart. Savor a special glass of wine on your private balcony and let the magic of Catalina sweep you away. All Catalina Island Vacation Rental properties can be viewed online at CatalinaVacations.com. Make yourself at home with Catalina Island Vacation Rentals. You'll find your perfect island getaway at CatalinaVacations.com.
A little over a year and a half ago, I was doing some wine tasting in Los Olivos, California, and I accidentally wandered into a new tasting room called Sarlos & Sons, and at the time I couldn't even pronounce the name. But boy, can I pronounce it now, because the Sarlos family has become great friends with Grape Encounters Radio. And not only are they a great family to know, they make some of the best wines that I've ever tasted, and they are staples in my household. So I want to steer you over to SarlosAndSons.com, because if you're looking for wines that you can buy that you know are going to be absolutely fabulous, then this is the place to go. No matter what you pay for their wines, I guarantee you that you will find an absolutely outstanding value at Sarlos & Sons. There's not a single wine on their wine list that will disappoint you. This is really, really something that I can recommend with all my heart and soul. It's SarlosAndSons.com. The Sarlos wines are absolutely out of this world. As I look back over the last year and a half, it's amazing to me how many of the guests that we've had on Grape Encounters Radio came to us through Facebook. You know, it's staggering how big the wine-loving community is on Facebook. And we really, really want you to become a member of the Grape Encounters Radio group page. So please, next time you're on Facebook, just search for Grape Encounters Radio. You'll find our group page and join the crowd and join the fun. You're going to discover a whole lot of really interesting people there. And if you just peruse the posts on Grape Encounters Radio, I think you'll make some additional friends that will really, really expand your wine-loving experience. Again, it's Grape Encounters Radio on Facebook. It's the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page. And we really, really want you to become our friend. And by the way, when you're there, let us know topics that you'd like us to talk about on Grape Encounters Radio.
And now your grape encounter continues. How sweet or dry it is on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
And it's your first Grape Encounter for 2011 with David Wilson. And who better to have your first Grape Encounter with than Wes Hagen of Clopepe Vineyards on the Central Coast in California. And gang, if you're not from California, you're listening some other place, then you need to get to know Wes, because there's nobody that offers a greater wealth of knowledge than Wes. It's interesting, sometimes on our Facebook page, people will actually, Wes, write questions to you. Not me, which, because they know that you'll have the answer, and I'll probably just make something up.
That's fine. You can always impersonate me as long as you're clever.
Well, no, I'm not that clever. And, you know, the truth of the matter is I'm just the wine lover guy and excited about whatever wine experiences we can have. Certainly excited about discovering new wines. But, you know, it's all for me about, you know, the whole package, you know, where you drink the wine, who you drink the wine with, you know, all the environmental things that surround it. But you are the craftsman and make sure that the wine that we pour in our glass is absolutely perfect. And that's what I wanted to talk about in this next segment, because I must tell you, I had a very, very disappointing holiday season, not because I didn't have fun, but from a wine perspective, it was a major loser. And let me just tell you what happened. I decided as we went into, you know, the holiday season that, you know, I was going to be going to a lot of parties and doing a lot of social things. So I thought it would be fun to go to a couple of the big box wine stores, some that I, you know, really, really love. And I purchased a whole lot of wine that I had never heard of and never seen. I decided I was just going to venture out, and it was a good time, you know, to collect some new things. And you know, it was incredibly disappointing how much wine is out there that is just, you know, really, it shouldn't be bottled and it shouldn't be sold.
It's a tough call because, you know, I think a lot of people, I mean, if you go back 10 or 15 years, you probably even would be more disappointed. I do think, and this has sort of been my sort of statement recently, which flies a little bit contrary to what the experience you had, but I think this economy is doing two things. One, it is really destroying wineries that don't have a reputation for quality, because back when everyone was flushed with cash, you could buy some wines like you did on a regular basis that don't have a reputation, try them, and people were selling wines, even wines that weren't that good. I think most wines now really are pretty good, but there's also a consolidation that's happening that is homogenizing the flavor of wines. I think because a lot of large corporations, there's really two or three corporations that run 80 or 90% of all the world's wineries, and those corporations expect a certain flavor profile and do micromanage the winery to the point where you really can't call those wines craft wines anymore. They're not wines made by a man or a woman with a vision of how they want to craft that wine for table or for a picnic or whatever. It's all about the boss up above saying, I need you to make this wine in this profile, and it needs at least 92 points or you're fired. You know, at that point, the winemaker is no longer a craftsperson, but they basically are a slave to a corporate engine.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. It sounds a lot like what happened to the music industry, because there were a few entities that created formula music, and for a long while, all the music started sounding exactly the same. You couldn't tell one artist from the other, and it wasn't until the independent music business really took off and there were new avenues for musicians to express themselves and get their music out there that we started hearing something creative. But for a long while, we heard a lot of this formula music, and it just feels like the same thing is happening in the wine business. But I think there are two things to talk about. The first is, and we've talked about it on shows very recently, yes, there are a handful of companies that dominate the winemaking and selling business. And I understand that they do have this flavor profile that is causing us to get a lot of the same qualities from bottle to bottle. But then I wonder, because there are also, if you go into some of the big box stores, you'll find a lot of independent winemakers as well. They're not so hot, I got to tell you.
You know, I think definitely we go through streaks. You know, you go through streaks of drinking great wine. You go through streaks of having bad corks. You have a great, you know, big streaks of, you know, I had this big streak 1 week where I dropped like four bottles on four different days. Some of it, one bottle was a very expensive bottle. And so, you know, everything kind of occurs in this life. I think definitely things take patterns. And I wouldn't say, you know, after three or four, you know, wines that didn't live up to your expectations, I think you have to sort of, it's like falling off a horse. You got to take a deep breath, look around you, make sure your balance is good, and get right back up on that horse and take some recommendations. What I find is if I have a number of bad wines that were either recommended by someone specifically, I ignore that person and go on to someone else that I trust.
Good point.
And say, I'd love to try, you know, give me an example, you know, give me a great under $25 French wine, a great under $30 Italian wine. And if you're getting poor results out of Australia, if you're getting poor results out of Austria or Germany, head on over to New Zealand, head on over to the central coast of California. Try something, you can travel the world in a glass every night and try a different, you know, country almost every night. So try a Greek wine, you know, try something that is out of the usual, and look for brands that you can count on, and look for brands that you can respect.
Let's talk first of all about the big box stores, okay? And when I say big box stores, I'm talking about the BevMo's and Total Wine, which are great stores, by the way. They have a lot of great inventory there. And, you know, if you go into a BevMo, you're going to see on the shelf shelf talkers that will give you Wilfred Wong's review of the wine, right? And he's got a great palate. And I think you can, you know, pretty much trust that what they say on the shelf talker is going to be reasonably accurate. But for every wine that's got a shelf talker, there are probably 10 or maybe there's 20 that don't. And yep. and it's weird when you think about it, because if you go into a grocery store and you're walking down the aisle and you're buying anything other than wine, you know the product before you actually purchase it. You know that if you buy Pepsi, you know it's what it's going to taste like. In fact, you basically know if you buy a cola, you know what it's going to taste like. Same thing for mustard or hamburger meat or whatever. But wine is completely different, because I mean, you can literally buy a bottle of wine that will nauseate you because right. It's so far from what your palate wants. And so I'm really perplexed on behalf of my listeners as to how to overcome that and where the future is going to take us. Because as you're standing there and you're looking at, let's say 1,000 wines, Total yep. Wine has 8,000 wines on their shelf. And you realize that out of 1,000 wines, that 700 of them are a complete mystery. And the only thing that you have to go on is the region or the varietal, or you don't know the winemaker. I think it's a bad idea to buy the wine.
Okay, let me make an analogy that I think will make it clear, and maybe this will give the listeners a little bit of idea of how they can go to the next, make the next step moving towards finding quality wines that they can enjoy for a price they can afford. Going down the wine aisle is exactly like going down the produce aisle, because both wine and fruit and vegetables, it's all produce, really. In fact, in France, when it says on the label, this is produce from this region. So if it's produce is a perfect example and a perfect analogy, because a red delicious apple is very shiny and very red and looks like it'll taste good, but actually I find red delicious apples usually to be disgusting. And commercial produce, I find, is generally not that delicious. Now, a Fuji apple may not look as beautiful and shiny as a Red Delicious, but I find a Fuji apple to be more crisp, better acidity, more sweet, and delicious. So you have to kind of know a Fuji apple from, say, New Zealand, or a Fuji apple from Washington may give you, and that required you to taste them next to each other and required you to make a decision, not based on the label, not based on is there a cute animal on the label, as a result of it being red and shiny, but as a result of a qualitative assessment of that wine or that piece of produce from that perspective. And problem is, when you grow up as a French kid, your parents will probably teach you wine from the time you were 6 years old, and now we try to borrow something about French wine culture and put 1,000 wines out there for you to choose. We didn't have that experience growing up. Well, I was lucky enough to have a wine family, so I kind of did. But most people don't have that base of knowledge to go through and say, wow, I know that Segacio Zinfandel, which is about $15, is a delicious wine consistently, and this is a wine that I want to buy. So you got to do a little research, check a couple of wine competitions, ask a couple wine geeks, look at a couple wine bulletin boards, Google, like, best wines under $25, make a list, put it on your PDA, put it on your smartphone, put it in your pocket in old-fashioned, on a notepad, take it to the store, and correlate what people think are great wines with what is in your local store. Find the stuff that's delicious and that's balanced and that you like year in and year out, and support those brands. It's just the same way you would buy a Fuji apple over a Red Delicious. The moment you start looking at labels and choosing cute animals on the labels, not to say that that's what you did, but shopping for wine via labels can be a very disappointing kind of thing.
Okay, I have to admit that I actually have bought a few bottles of wine because they had cute animals on the label, or, you know, cute labels in general. Usually I just buy the wine for the novelty, but I do want to address this analogy that you've given us comparing buying wine to buying produce, because I think it's the one place where I probably don't agree with you, just because walking down the produce aisle, I can get a pretty good feel for how good a tomato is, or a melon is, or a cluster of broccoli is by just looking at it and smelling it. It's usually pretty accurate. But when it comes to a bottle of wine, all I see is the bottle and the label. I can't smell the wine inside. And all I can know is what the shelf talker tells me about the wine, or what the winemaker has chosen to put on the back of the label. So I'm not sure that the analogy works, but we've got a lot more to talk about on Grape Encounters Radio with our guest Wes Hagen from Clopepe Vineyards.
You're indulging yourself on Grape Encounters Radio on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. A tropical island vacation doesn't have to mean long lines of security, crowded flights, and a huge travel budget. You'll find breathtaking ocean views, tropical breezes, exceptional dining and shopping, plus hundreds of ways to have fun on land and sea, just 26 miles off the Southern California coast, on enchanting Catalina Island. And there's absolutely no better way to enjoy everything that Catalina has to offer than in your own private Catalina Island vacation rental. Catalina Island Vacation Rentals offers you the choice of nearly 200 island homes, cottages, and condos, including an amazing selection of beautifully appointed Hamilton Cove villas, which offer sweeping ocean views and even come with a golf cart. Savor a special glass of wine on your private balcony and let the magic of Catalina sweep you away. All Catalina Island Vacation Rental properties can be viewed online at CatalinaVacations.com. Make yourself at home with Catalina Island Vacation Rentals. You'll find your perfect island getaway at CatalinaVacations.com.
Hey, if you're looking for a really good wine club to join, I really recommend the original Wine of the Month Club. It's a really terrific wine club, and you will find a link to the Wine of the Month Club over at GrapeEncountersRadio.com. This isn't a shameless paid endorsement. We're endorsing the Wine of the Month Club because we really, really believe in what they're doing over there, and we really think the quality of their products are out of this world. Also, just for fun, on GrapeEncountersRadio.com, you will find a link to Papa Burt's, where you will find the wine sports bra. Yes, indeedy, it's a bra that you can fill up with a full bottle of your favorite wine. It is simply the best invention that we've found in a long time. So check out what we've got to offer over at GrapeEncountersRadio.com, and be sure to also visit all of our other friends who are linked to GrapeEncountersRadio.com. Check it out, folks. Hey, listen, if you guys want to discover some really amazing wines, wines that I recommend with all my heart and soul, then you need to go over to SarlosAndSons.com. Or better yet, if you're in Los Olivos, California, you just want to check out their tasting room, because it's an incredible place to taste some incredible wines. They've just released the 2009 Mother, which is a Grenache Blanc that will blow your shorts off. Also, the 2009 In-Law, which is a whole cluster Pinot Noir, which is to die for. Also, the 2008 Father, which is 100% Syrah. And I love, love, love the Sarlos & Sons Syrahs, or the 2008 Sun, which is 100% estate-grown Cabernet. And finally, the 1947 Man and Wife, which is 100% estate-grown from two vineyards. That's just a part of the list. There are so many more wines for you to enjoy, but I can tell you absolutely and completely that you will love everything you taste at Sarlos & Sons. It's SarlosAndSons.com. It cracks me up when I think about the beginning of the Grape Encounters Radio website. When we first put it up, we had visitors to the tune of about two or three or four every single day, and I wondered what we were doing that for. But now we've got literally thousands of people visiting the website every single day, and we encourage you to do exactly the same. Go over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com. There you will find our complete archive of every single show that we've done for the last year and a half. You'll also find links to all of the friends that we've made on Grape Encounters Radio. You'll also find our Grape Encounters Radio blog and our Grape Encounters Radio photo gallery, which has photos of many of the people that we've had here on the show. Please wander on over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com. You can also send us a note there. It's a great way to reach us. Just let us know your comments about the show. Let us know if you have somebody interesting that you'd like to put on the show or things that you'd like us to talk about on Grape Encounters Radio.
Your grape escape continues on Grape Encounters Radio. Here on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
Okay, and we are walking down the produce aisle on Grape Encounters Radio with Wes Hagen, the winemaker at Clopepe Vineyards in the Santa Rita Hills of the central coast of California, a really quality Pinot Noir making operation. You guys do some other things as well. You've got a Syrah, right, under the Axis Mundi name.
Yep, that's our second label. That's stuff under screw cap for about $20, just to give people sort of an option to drink our wines without dropping a little bit more money. So yeah, love to make a little bit of Syrah, but our real focus and our passion is making Pinot Noir right off the Clopepe Vineyard, where I'm the vineyard manager as well as the winemaker.
Well, anyway, gang, the reason I've got Wes on is because, you know, I've taken so many people, Wes, out to your vineyard and taken the tour. And I don't think there's anybody that offers more insight into the wine business than you do. I mean, you're a very objective guy and, you know, somebody that I trust more than just about anybody else. And if I have a question, you're the guy that I want to ask the question of because I know I'm going to get a straight answer. But we were talking earlier about, you know, this whole dilemma of you know, going into... Well, in California, you can go into a supermarket and you can, in many supermarkets, choose from whatever, 500 to 1,000 wines now. It's just absolutely crazy. In other states, you can't buy in a supermarket, but you can go to a wine store. And there's no question that there's a huge glut of wine on the market right now. There's an enormous amount of wine that's being put out by, you know, the big three or four winemakers. But then there's an enormous amount of independent winemaking products that are showing up on the shelves as well, and very little information about this. You know, this holiday season, I decided that I was going to take some chances and just load up a few cases of random wine, you know, read what's on the label, you know, look at where the wine was coming from, look at the, you know, the year, you know, take the information that I had and try to make a pretty good decision. And I found that I made more bad decisions than good. So the question that I'm grappling with is, should I not do that? Should I instead just do my research at home and then go seek out the wine?
Well, there's also a third choice, which is to go to a wine store that may not be able to have the amount of sales to keep the prices as low as one of the stores you mentioned. I think the big box stores are probably for, even though they actually appeal to people who don't know much about wine because the prices are low and the selection's so high, I think you really have to be very careful, and I think you're actually much better off going into those type of stores if you have a little bit of information under your belt. If you need help, you need to go to a local wine store where the prices are a little high, but the people who work in that store will develop a relationship with you. So when you tell them, I really liked that Kim Crawford Sauvignon Blanc you sold me, I'm ready to try another wine like that. And they go, oh, well, of course, Mr. Wilson, of course, Mr. Hagen, I have the history of your purchases right here, and it looks like you really like light-bodied, you know,
right,
Pinot Noirs with a lot of earth.
Right.
I think, you know, let's take you to Oregon this week. Let's take you here. Let's take you there. So wine is one of those last, you know, kind of things in retail where having someone guide you through, it's like having buying a suit off the rack versus having a suit that's tailored to you. You're going to pay
right.
more for the tailored suit, but when you walk out in that suit, you're going to look really good, just the same way was when you open that bottle of wine. You can go back to the store and go, you know, I really didn't like that bottle of wine you sold me last time. They may actually give you a refund. They may give you a discount off your next bottle. They're going to work hard to make sure that they sell you the type of wines that you really enjoy. So your choices are walk blind, buy blind, and get ready to be disappointed. Or, you know, do your research, go to a big box store and buy the wines on a specific list that you've made from suggestions either from critics you trust or friends that you trust. Or develop a reputation with a retailer that can guide you to regions and wines that you normally wouldn't have found, that you're going to find wonderful quality and wonderful flavors that you might not have anticipated.
Well, let me ask you this question. Is it really necessary for these large wine stores to carry the amount of inventory that they're carrying? And is there going to come a point when the public puts pressure on the winemakers to turn out a little better product? Because, you know, if you go into these stores and you start buying up these $3, $4, $5, $7, $8, $9 bottles of wine, you know, largely you are going to be disappointed by those wines. I mean, that's just a fact. You know,
I think a lot less disappointment from, you know, the last 20 years. I judge a lot of competition.
Yeah, I agree.
And I find that the quality has actually been improving pretty nicely. I think that, choosing blind, you're going to come up with good wines, mediocre wines, and wines that you don't enjoy. And I do think that there's a huge pressure right now to produce wines that most people will find delicious and clean and varietal. In fact, I think there's such a pressure to create these squeaky, clean, fruity wines that we are losing a little bit of the character of the regions where they come from, because, of course, one way to make a big fruity wine that's going to score high is to let the fruit get really ripe, and the riper the fruit gets, I think that's going to homogenize the character of the wine and make it taste like every other New World wine that you've ever tasted. And so I think that to answer your question directly, there's a massive pressure with this economy right now to produce good wine. And the wines and most of the wines that come into those places are tasted by someone who's a professional. So, you know, I think if you find a wine that you don't like, I think it is your prerogative to tell the retailer you bought that wine from, you know, I bought that wine blind, kind of trusting that you would have something good on the shelves, and I thought it kind of failed because it had off flavors, it was too acidic, it didn't have enough fruit. Use a specific, talk to your retailers and have a conversation with them so that they know what the end user is actually enjoying and what you're not enjoying.
It's got to be
a two-way road.
But here's the problem. You know, you've got a wine store that's got several thousand bottles of wine, and especially if they're not an independent store and the wine is being foisted upon them by a corporate entity, you're going to find out that most of the people in those stores haven't got a clue about most of that. They haven't tasted those 3 or 4 or 8,000 wines. They don't know.
And you've doubled down on your corporate. They're not only going to be buying corporate wines, and especially wines from places that are discounting the wines heavily so they can make a profit, but then you also get the corporate guy who's actually buying the corporate wine deciding what you're going to drink. And that's, again, why I think supporting local wine stores that have interesting and wonderful sort of friendly geeks to guide you to wines. Like I said, the best thing you can do at a restaurant or at a wine shop is go, the first thing, compliment the selection, and then ask, what do you take home from the store? Where's the value? And in this economy and people that really love wine, you're not going to make people go, oh, crap, you know, this person is trying to get a cheap wine or not spend very much money on a wine. If you compliment the selection and then ask someone who works there, where's the value? Where are the killer wines under $20, killer wines under $40, whatever you want to spend? I think that's a great way to really find great wines at a restaurant. And once you get past the idea that you're asking for value, I think what you're going to get back from taking that chance is going to be something very special.
So let me ask you this. You sell wine to some of these nice, chic, independent stores. Are there times when you have 3 or 4 or 5 cases of something left and you give them a smoking deal on that last bit of inventory in exchange for them buying something else? And do those show up as great deals in those wine stores?
We try, because our production's so small, we have a sort of a policy that our prices are priced, and we make sure that our prices on our website are the best prices you can get anywhere on the wines. We don't really discount heavily. I guess there was a long 2001 Chardonnay way, way back, and we sold a couple cases, to the wine house in L.A., and the thing was that wine was so good, I think by discounting it, we actually did a disservice to the wine. I think if that wine was on the shelf for $45 and people would have taken it home as a $45 wine, I think they would have probably treated it different than if it was a $25 wine. And I think that at $45, when we spend more money on a wine, we spend a little more time trying to find what's so great about the wine. So, you know, pricing is obviously a lot of interesting smoke and mirrors. From our production, we're not doing that, but there are a lot of wines that are being blown out right now because people have changed their wine buying habits, and the traditional big wine buyers, the kind of demographic that spends a lot of money on wine, has certainly shifted.
But let me ask you this question. You say there's a lot of pressure on winemakers to make better wines. Would you agree that in the, say, $30, $40, $50 range, that if you bought 10 bottles of wine randomly, that you'd have a much better chance of getting quality wine than if you bought 10 random bottles under $10? I mean, I think when you when you get up there and the prices get higher and higher, I think there's more pressure for that wine to be a high quality wine.
I think, oddly, like, where to me the consistency is really spectacular is 15 to 35.
Really? Okay.
Believe it or not, I think the consistency goes down once you leave the 15 to 35. But what happens is the wines, in a really wonderful way, start better representing a time and a place. Now, if you can't really tell the difference between a wine that was, you know, grown in a cool climate versus a wine that was grown in a hot climate, there's no reason to buy the high end of wines. Once you start spending more than $35 a bottle of wine, I expect the wine to take me someplace, put a chair in a vineyard someplace where I can smell the vintage, I can smell the varietal,
yes,
I can smell the influence of the viticulture and the winemaking. But if that's not of interest to you, I don't think you need to really deal with those high end wines. Interestingly enough, $100 Cabernet from Napa is all starting to taste the same because they're all making it ultra ripe and homogenizing any character from the vineyard right out of it, in my estimation. So if you taste the 95-point Parker wine, 95-point Wine Spectator wine, and say all these Napa cabs that get high scores, they're all big, rich, dark, and completely, you know, are too intense to match with food at a table, and that's what you like, well, God bless you. You know, Napa could use your $100, but for me, you know, European wines around $30 right now are such a great bargain, and the wines are so balanced and beautiful at table. I have a hard time ignoring those wines, and definitely online you can find a lot of great deals on some of the best wines in the world, whether they be from California, from Oregon, from New Zealand, from France, Italy, Spain, Germany. I find drinking freaky little wines is a fun thing to do. You know, try out Greece, you know, maybe someplace that you haven't tasted wines from before. You know, the white wines of Portugal. You know, there's no reason to limit yourself. There's quality wines being made in dozens of countries. And I think we live in an age where we have an unprecedented ability to travel the world in a wine glass and do so without having to be a millionaire.
Okay, Wes, here's what I want to do. In the next segment, I want to take people out of their comfort zone and get you to make some recommendations to people who are stuck on certain varietals. For instance, if you like Cabernets or Pinots or Merlots, let's talk about some things that people can try that will take them out of the box and might surprise them.
Sure.
And open up new horizons. Can we do that?
Sure.
Okay, so be it.
We're far from ready to put a cork in it yet. You're listening to Grape Encounters Radio on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
As I look back over the last year and a half, it's amazing to me how many of the guests that we've had on Grape Encounters Radio came to us through Facebook. You know, it's staggering how big the wine-loving community is on Facebook. And we really, really want you to become a member of the Grape Encounters Radio group page. So please, next time you're on Facebook, just search for Grape Encounters Radio. You'll find our group page and join the crowd and join the fun. You're going to discover a whole lot of really interesting people there. And if you just peruse the posts on Grape Encounters Radio, I think you'll make some additional friends that will really, really expand your wine-loving experience. Again, it's Grape Encounters Radio on Facebook. It's the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page. And we really, really want you to become our friend. And by the way, when you're there, let us know topics that you'd like us to talk about on Grape Encounters Radio. At Grape Encounters Radio, we're very choosy about who we put on this show. And even even more choosy about who we put on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. We really, really want to present nothing but quality to the listeners of Grape Encounters Radio and the visitors to GrapeEncountersRadio.com. But I want to really encourage you to go over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com because we've got some products there that I think you will really enjoy. First, just out of pure fun, we've presented to you the wine sports bra from Papa Burt's, and you've really got to check that out because it's a very, very cool invention. And also on Grape Encounters Radio, you'll find a link to the original Wine of the Month Club, the only wine club that we wholeheartedly endorse. So wander over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com, and we also have lots of links to all of our friends, people that we really think that you need to know. It's GrapeEncountersRadio.com. A little over a year and a half ago, I was doing some wine tasting in Los Olivos, California, and I accidentally wandered into a new tasting room called Sarlos & Sons, and at the time I couldn't even pronounce the name. But boy, can I pronounce it now, because the Sarlos family has become great friends with Grape Encounters Radio. And not only are they a great family to know, they make some of the best wines that I've ever tasted, and they are staples in my household. So I want to steer you over to SarlosAndSons.com, because if you're looking for wines that you can buy that you know are going to be absolutely fabulous, then this is the place to go. No matter what you pay for their wines, I guarantee you that you will find an absolutely outstanding value at Sarlos & Sons. There's not a single wine on their wine list that will disappoint you. This is really, really something that I can recommend with all my heart and soul. It's SarlosAndSons.com. The Sarlos wines are absolutely out of this world. It cracks me up when I think about the beginning of the Grape Encounters Radio website. When we first put it up, we had visitors to the tune of about two or three or four every single day, and I wondered what we were doing that for. But now we've got literally thousands of people visiting the website every single day, and we encourage you to do exactly the same. Go over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com. There you will find our complete archive of every single show that we've done for the last year and a half. You'll also find links to all of the friends that we've made on Grape Encounters Radio. You'll also find our Grape Encounters Radio blog and our Grape Encounters Radio photo gallery, which has photos of many of the people that we've had here on the show. Please wander on over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com. You can also send us a note there. It's a great way to reach us. Just let us know your comments about the show. Let us know if you have somebody interesting that you'd like to put on the show or things that you'd like us to talk about on Grape Encounters Radio.
Good to the last drop. Still time for more Grape Encounters Radio here on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
And it's David Wilson sitting in the super secret broadcast location on the phone with the Google of wine, Wes Hagen of the Clopepe Vineyards in the Santa Rita Hills of California. And we started talking in the last segment about some of the varietals that are out there that people are really super unfamiliar with. But if you go into the big box stores now, you're going to find some wines that you've absolutely never heard of, but that are really crazy good. Hey, Wes, there's some amazing things out there, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is before a wine varietal becomes a commodity like Cabernet or Chardonnay, usually those wines are actually a better value because there's not an added, they don't add money on just because it's a varietal that everyone goes after. So, yeah, I've got some great.
Okay, well can I play a little game with you on this for a second? Let's do it this way, okay? So if I'm a Chardonnay lover, let's say, what could I go after that would be different and unique, you know, different varietals and different places to find wine? Where would I go?
Well, Chardonnay is a little bit difficult because most Chardonnays, because it's a rich kind of expression, it's a little bit more. Chardonnay tends to be a very singular varietal. There's not a lot of white wines like Chardonnay, but let's try Viognier. Try Viognier.
Yeah.
And Viognier, it has some richness, some unctuousness, but it's a little bit more floral and a little less buttery.
You know, and I'll tell you something. If Viognier is a wine that surprises a lot of people. I think there's never been a time when I've introduced Viognier to somebody that they didn't go, wow, what is this? I mean, it's really well-liked by newcomers to the wine. So
it's so aromatic that the eyes, the eyebrows will definitely go up when you smell it. It's either you love it or it's just not your thing, but the people who love Viognier tend to really like it. And I think that there's a little bit of crossover for Chardonnay because of the richness.
And Viogniers are being made in abundance in your area on the Central Coast. Just a lot of great Viogniers there. Okay, let's go to the next one. How about Merlots?
Well, you know, Merlot, if you love Merlot, I wouldn't go too far off the beaten path right now because there's some really great deals in high-quality Merlot. And Zinfandel, I think, is an easy way to kind of go from Merlot. Merlot, to me, is about plumminess. It's about richness. It's about it's kind of about softness. You know, I think specifically on Merlot, I mean, you can look at Dolcetto from Italy, Zinfandel from California. And I think, you know, even like if you want to get kind of even a little bit freakier, there's a varietal called Nero d'Avola that comes out of South Italy. That's kind of rich and dark like that. But Columbia Crest makes a delicious Merlot for the money, and that's kind of one that I recommend quite a bit. If you want to try a Zinfandel, these are all under. I'm trying to choose ones for under $25.
Okay.
Segesio Sonoma Zinfandel, $17. Killer wine. Really, really good stuff. Buckhorn makes a very good Merlot called Decoy for under $25.
Okay.
May have some other stuff in it.
Okay, so let's take Cabernet drinkers out of their comfort zone. What would you recommend that they experiment with?
Nebbiolo.
Yeah.
Dolcetto from Italy. Grenache from Spain. Priorat is a wonderful region for Cabernet. Let's also not forget Malbec from Argentina. Let's, you know, throw in, you know, look at the Cab family, Cabernet Franc. If you want to freak yourself out, go to the East Coast and try East Coast of the United States and try some Cabernet Franc. Try some a Cabernet Franc from Virginia, which was actually, you know, the first place grapes were ever grown for wine in the United States. They're growing some nice Cabernet Franc in Virginia. And don't think Napa has, you know, a stranglehold on great Cabernet. Washington Cabernet Sauvignon, Happy Canyon of Santa Barbara. Grow some delicious Cabernet Sauvignon. But if you're going to kind of go off the beaten path, I would think Nebbiolo from the Lange region of Italy, Priorat, Grenache, and even some of the wines from other wines, red wines from Spain too. I think Spain produces a lot of wines that have that sort of rich, dark, tannic kind of character to it that I think will appeal. And let's not forget, most people think that actually Cabernet Sauvignon was developed in Spain and then went back over the Pyrenees Mountains, basically back into Bordeaux. So there's some wonderful sort of character of Spanish reds that will have that kind of nice tannic match with a steak, big, bold in the mouth kind of character.
Do me a favor, revisit Malbec for a second because there's a lot of that showing up now. I mean, it seems to be one of the wines that's really on the rise now.
Malbec is one of the Malbec and Petit Verdot are the two. Grapes in Bordeaux, France, that they use to blend with Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Merlot. So a little bit in France of the Malbec and the Petit Verdot are used for color and spice and complexity. But of course, when Argentina and Chile and some of the South American companies started experimenting with these grapes, what they found is that the Malbec by itself was making a superior wine.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we're going to stay down in South America, you should probably mention Uruguay. And Tannat, T-A-N-N-A-T, if you want to freak yourself out and confound your wine geek friends, go get yourself a bottle of Uruguayan Tannat.
I just did that. That is, it's an absolutely terrific wine. You know, we've got 1 minute left, so we're gonna
yep.
end it with your personal favorite, Pinot.
My personal favorite Pinot. Well, you're going to have to spend some money, but I would probably say it's a vineyard called Clos de la Roche, and it's in Burgundy, France, and Dujac makes a beautiful version of it. You're looking at probably between $200 and $800. I can't afford it, but when someone else breaks it out, I'm happy to drink some Grand Cru Pinot Noir. If you're talking domestically, if I have to sort of look for value, I'm going to go to Roessler, which is R-O-E-S-S-L-E-R, or Siduri, any of their AVA blends, either the Willamette Valley blend, the Sonoma blend, or Roessler, R-O-E-S-S-L-E-R, Blue Jay. The Blue Jay Roessler is a blend of their lesser barrels that don't make the single vineyard designate program. And they're ridiculously good for the money. So I think that would be a great Pinot Noir to drink on a regular basis.
And you know what, gang?
Yep.
If you're really looking for a great Pinot, and I mean a great one, and I'm not being paid to do this, you have to look no further than Clos Pepi because Wes just puts so much into his wines. There's really no better value on the planet as far as I'm concerned. And I really feel good about making that plug.
I think the prices are fair. And I think you can put a $49 bottle of Clos Pepi Pinot Noir on the table with 5 years of age on it as a nice Premier Cru Burgundy and get value for it. And I think if you look in the world of wine, of fine wine collectibles and wines you can lay down 5 to 10 years, I think the wines are very fairly priced. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send you over my list of about 30 or 40 of my favorite value wines under $25. None of them are my wine or any of my winemaker cronies' wines. Specifically, so if you want to post those on the website or on your Facebook, you're more than welcome to put those up to guide people a little bit more carefully towards those.
Well, you can't ask for a better gift for 2011. Hey, folks, that's all we got today for Grape Encounters Radio. Have a very happy New Year, and we'll talk to you next week.
Catch all of our previous episodes on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. We are here 24/7, whenever you feel like uncorking one together.